Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 464. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am one of your hosts, Todd Oxtra. Charlie Carden is still recovering from his intergalactic waters tour of the Star Trek universe. He then went and crossed the borders into other fandom at Disney to see Galaxy's Edge, and he's given a break, just catching up on his steam. He'll be back next week, folks. Don't worry. But because of that, I am joined by a newcomer, a new secret friend, on our couch to talk about the wonderful world of nerd, and that is Mr. Captain Logan from both the Keyhauled podcast and the XCP podcast. Welcome, Logan.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing great. I love talking to new people about the world of nerd, all the things we love. I love to take people out of their like their normal cadence, especially podcasters. If you cover a specific topic, like you're big into the world of Sea of Thieves and video games and Xbox and all this fun stuff, then say, let's talk about the other part of your fandoms or your what you enjoy, and give you a chance to just exhale when all of that other stuff gets a little too much at times. So I'm glad to have you on.
Me too. I don't get to talk about this stuff with anyone on a regular cadence, so it's like having the opportunity to kind of sit down and just talk about some of the news that we're going to be talking about today is actually really, really surprising, but also very exciting, because I think we've actually got some really fun topics to cover today. So very happy to have this opportunity to kind of sit down and chat with everyone and kind of share my thoughts for once beyond just like secret Discord messages between people.
Excellent. Well, when we have a new guest on the show, we always ask for your geek origin story, kind of your elevator pitch of how you became the nerd you are today. So what's yours?
Mine started, I would what the Gen Zers would, or the Gen Alphas or Gen Zers would call an old. So I appreciate the fact that I grew up with Saturday morning cartoons and going outside and staying out till the lights came on, and then running around and, you know, playing with super soakers and Nerf guns. And to me, fandom for me started because of those old 80s cartoons back when they were like trying to sell toys. So like Transformers and G.I. Joe and Ninja Turtles and stuff. And that just kind of kept moving forward as, you know, animation changed, got better. You know, I grew up with a lot of the kind of fandoms and comic book characters that are in the kind of TV shows that were going on at the time. And then I started to dabble in comics as a result. And just throughout the 90s, it was like a healthy blend of whatever was on TV to kind of sell me on, you know, like the figures that they were trying to pitch to kids in Toys R Us, or the video games that I was trying to get for my Super Nintendo or my Nintendo 64. And ever since then, it's just been just a nostalgia trip since, you know, the shows are gone. Sometimes they've gotten little revivals, but I fell in love with the characters. I fell in love with their story and who they were. I appreciate like what fans of those fandoms have done nowadays to be able to kind of like revitalize or keep alive those communities. And it's just kind of a wild time to think that the biggest AAA movies that we see nowadays are all based on comics and games and fandoms that I was just like a happy little kid watching every Saturday morning, man, from like 7 a.m. all the way till like 3 p.m. was nothing but cartoons for me. And I'm sure my parents appreciated the heck that I was just sitting in front of the TV, not bothering them for the Saturday morning.
You know, and I think being a little bit older in this realm is great, gives you great perspective on the fact that I think people don't realize what not a renaissance, but with just our amount of riches we have in, you know, genre of all sorts, where previously you were limited. So that's why there were so many touchstones that so many people shared, because there was just fewer things. So you all gathered around those things that were definitely celebrating your love of just, you know, science fiction, fantasy, and all those things. So yeah, we're definitely blessed. So sometimes we forget about and like what's wrong with everything, but it's like, wow, did you see, you know, the 80s films we got about or anything, if they ever came out? We got the Incredible Hulk, or we got, you know, something really bad. So we should feel blessed.
So. People want to look in and like chagrin some of the stuff that we have nowadays. I tell you, I challenge anyone, go back and find the 80s film called Robot Jocks, J-O-X. And if you know that so film, good. You know why that film is so bad, but also so good. But that is a movie that you're going to, if you want to, like, just take a look at Robot Jocks. Go watch like a video of that on YouTube and then think of like what Guillermo del Toro did with Pacific Rim, and you will understand just how good we have it now.
I loved Robot Jocks. It was just like, I can't believe this is happening on the screen. Oh my God. Someone extracted my dreams and put it on the screen. Loved it. Oh, perfect. I love a good Robot Jocks reference. So yeah, once again, J-O-X, which makes no sense because like,
yeah,
it is. It's because they're robots. They can't be CKS because that's a human thing. Yes.
Yeah. These were highly trained professionals only available to pilot these giant mechs.
Exactly. It's basically great SEO too, because you're not going to confuse it with, you know, the other robots.
No. Yeah.
Well, very cool. This is going to be a fun adventure in the world of nerd, folks. And get ready, because before we do that, we want to thank our Patreons, the folks that make this happen, that keep the lights on for us and allow us to make content that we didn't before. So thank you so much to our friends with benefits, John Sidorf, Phoenix Sisters Cosplay, Brendan Meyer, Corey and HD, Matthew Keel, and our BFFs, Sean, Stella, and Henry Nias, and Missy Merchant. The cool part about our Patreon, just if you subscribe at the $2 level, you get all our audio podcasts without ads. So enjoy that. And there's no, we're now on YouTube Podcast, which is unique. It's weird. It's a little funny, but we're there now. So if you see more things on our YouTube, a lot of it is now because we are podcasts there, because RIP Google Podcast. So check that out. And just get ready for our next Patreon events. We're gonna have some new Spinner Rack episodes. We are doing more with our spotlight, where we bring in a special guest, talk about something they love or a creator. So more to come there as well. So thank you all, and check out our Patreon and get a one week free trial and see if you like it. So with that, Logan, on this week's We Got This Covered, I brought up a comic cover that it dallied from our normal plan, where we always cover like the episode number, but I didn't find much at the 64 comic book issue number, but at the 164, I found a treat, and that is Captain America and the Falcon, number 164. This came out May 15th, 1973. Predates me by 2 years, so this is ancient, folks. And this cover, oh my goodness. So it's interesting, because I don't know when they added "and the Falcon" to Captain America's title, but that's kind of cool. You saw that over time as the Falcon became a big part of Captain America's life. He didn't have Bucky anymore, because obviously Bucky died in World War II, but Falcon basically became his partner in crime, or partner in heroing. And in this one, we've got a cap on one side that says, "Follow me, Avenger, for I am Nightshade, and I never lie." Okay, I never lie. Okay, but she says, "Your friend the Falcon is around the corner," and then you see around the corner, it kind of looks like he's on the corner rather than on the ground on the corner. He says,
"Yeah."
It says Queen of the Werewolves, and it's got Falcon as a werewolf in chains. So, Logan, assuming you've never read this comic, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I think it's wild, dude. Like, There's situations where it's like Captain America could handle just about anything, but I think one of the hardest times, and I think you brought it up wisely, is Bucky is kind of a weak point for Cap. His friends are a weak point, you know, when they're in danger, and it's so crazy to see Falcon as a werewolf, and having the subtitle of Queen of the Werewolves kind of already tells the reader like what they're in for. Like, there's already a sense of deception and peril that Captain is going to have to deal with, and it's just a great kind of testament to, you know, what you can do with just like, you always say, like, you know, never judge a book by its cover. In this case, you actually can, and this is actually kind of crazy. So I'm it's cool that they did it. I've never even heard of the Queen of Werewolves, but that could most definitely be like an Anne Rice movie if they wanted.
Oh yeah. And comic book covers were like, sometimes the panel was never in the comic. It was just like a buy this comic. It's not, it doesn't, it, we want the cover is going to sell you because you think it's that. And they do a, you know, a bait and switch on this one though. I mean, it probably is this because you know, who's buying this cover except for like, oh, werewolves and Captain America. Why not? And I love the fact I've never heard of Nightshade before, character I'm not familiar with. And then yeah. I like the fact that whoever the inker is or the, can't remember the name of the person that actually does the lettering. It's the letter, probably. But they highlight certain things. Nightshade, lie, exclamation point, and around the corner. They're not letting you pass any details on this story.
No. Very blatant. Yeah.
Yes, yes, absolutely. 20 cents, though. For 20 cents, you're getting your money's worth. The guy gets to draw a werewolf. I mean, it could be better.
That's so crazy. Well,
I assume this is available on Marvel Unlimited, so if any of you want to check it out and not spend any money except for the subscription, check it out and give us your review. I'd love to hear what people thought of this book and to truly find out if Nightshade was the Queen of the Werewolves. I guess we'll never know until someone tells us. All right. Well, that is it for the opening of the show, but now we've got to check in with our gal pal, our senior news correspondent. So without further delay, Madam Web, take it away.
Now it's time for Madam Web's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Web. Madam Web, I believe you and Captain Logan have something in common. He loves to sail on the seas, taking on pirates. And I believe you were a famous pirate back in the day. You were famous for pirating those ships that had all those Betamax players back in the early 80s. It's the reason why the Betamax failed, because you limited the supply and VHS took off. So, Logan, if you need a real pirate on your team, please reach out to Madam Web. She would like to go after some booty.
That's awesome. I didn't know about that, but that's... God, Beta, that takes me back as well, too. I'm always looking for a good sailing partner. So I didn't expect it in Madam Web, but there you go.
You know, you could just strap her to like your bow. I mean, she would be okay with that, too. Yeah.
You'd be a perfect figurehead.
Oh, she would scare so many people away. Well, very good. We get into the news this week, and the first story is kind of neat because we're coming full circle. And we talk about William Gibson, famous author who has wrote and inspired so many creations in the world of cyberpunk. I mean, he's like the granddaddy, the premier person who really established this genre. And I mean, there's been the good, the bad, and the ugly. We've gotten great things like the cyberpunk RPG, which is one of the biggest RPGs, I believe, ever created by an African-American, which is cool. I think a lot of people don't realize in the tabletop and the RPG type of D&D type of tile games. That's very cool. We also got, you know, if you think of like movies, you may know, like, you know, I guess like the Johnny Mnemonic, which sometimes, you know, a little iffy, but still some cool ideas about the future and tech and man and all of those things. But William Gibson did that. And obviously, The Matrix was a big part of that, too. And cyberpunk, the game. And you've seen this genre used in video games quite a lot. So it's kind of cool. Well, one of his most, I guess, celebrated novels, Neuromancer, which I don't believe has ever been adapted before, or maybe ideas have been taken from it. But it came out in 1984. And it's going to be adapted for Apple TV in a 10-episode TV series. It's going to be created by Graham Roland and DJD Dillard, I'll get this right, for Skydance Entertainment. At this point, I'm looking to see if I know them from anywhere or if they've created anything else. And I don't really. I guess the other contemporary of the cyberpunk area would be Philip K. Dick, too. Yeah, do androids dream of... Electric Sheep, is that what it is?
Yep.
Title? Okay. Yeah. Yep. So there's been a lot of people that contributed to it, but we're getting one of the classics of the genre. Classics, kind of scary now that that book is essentially 40 years old. So you, Logan, have talked about, we just talked about this, you're a fan of cyberpunk. So what are your thoughts on this? Is this going to be, you think, potentially being able to be adapted in a good way?
I think it will. If you've never read Neuromancer, it's kind of the story, it like if you ever watched The Matrix, it's kind of the idea of like a main protagonist who's kind of in the world of the like a futuristic setting, it'll be interesting when they place this, because given that, you know, Neuromancer was written back in the 80s, their future was like the 2020s, the 2030s and stuff. So for them, thinking of like what our future would look like, it was effectively what we think Cyberpunk 2077 will look like, where everyone has, you know, mechanical augmentations to your body, enhancements. You're always jacked into the internet. You're always connected. You don't have peripherals really anymore. It's all kind of done either through your vision or through your thing. And I'm curious to see like what they do with Neuromancer, because so many of the ideas that were in Neuromancer as a book were partially based off of military technology or just weird thoughts that came as a result of, like, you look at like Star Trek is a good example of, you know, how technology has learned from science fiction. Like science fiction for Neuromancer has been kind of translated into what we have nowadays with like TVs, screens, phones, VR, things like that. So I'll be really curious to see like where they go with Neuromancer. Are they going to kind of keep it kind of retro 80s where stuff is still kind of tactile, like you still have physical buttons? Or will they go like full Minority Report where everything is just a projection on a screen and you're just kind of interacting with nothing? So the story's pretty good with Neuromancer. I don't want to give away anything in case anyone wants to dive into the book or anything like that. But it does kind of start out pretty slow, kind of low key. And then it goes off the rails, and it goes off the rails in a big way. So I'll be really curious how they manage to pull all of that together in 10 episodes. But Neuromancer, man, if it wasn't for William Gibson, I don't think Mike Pondsmith, creator of Cyberpunk, would have had as much inspiration to kind of create that world. I don't think we would have seen, like you mentioned, Lawnmower Man or The Matrix or half of that stuff nowadays. William Gibson really, like, if I'm blanking on his name, who did Lord of the Rings. Jake,
Tolkien?
No.
Or are you talking about Peter Jackson? Oh, Tolkien, the author. Okay.
Yeah. If it wasn't for Tolkien doing Lord of the Rings, we probably wouldn't have half of the you know, the games that we have nowadays or the stories that we have nowadays based around like orcs and humans. Same thing with William Gibson. Gibson is like one of the founding fathers of like the cyberpunk genre.
Yeah, I think of a game like Deus Ex, same thing. I mean, it's that world.
Yeah, Deus Ex is insane.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love it. I can't wait. I think it'll be really awesome.
Yeah, I don't know when this is going to come out. Typically, when they announce it, it's at least a year away. So maybe we'll see that in 2025. But the good thing is this is on Apple TV Plus. And if Apple TV Plus has shown us anything, they believe in quality over quantity. So that gives me faith. And they typically keep shows around. So, there was one show that I felt definitely was inspired by Neuromancer and Cyberpunk. It's called The Peripheral. I don't know if you have a chance to watch it. It was on Amazon Prime. I don't know what it's based on. It's based on a book called The Peripheral.
Because Peripheral is a William Gibson book. From 2014.
Okay, well, then that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me. I really liked the series. Chloe Grace Moretz is the protagonist. Oh, very cool adaptation. Fantastic. So I think if you like that, you may like the series. I don't know if it was renewed or not, but definitely enjoyed the first season.
I feel like I'm going crazy here. I'm pretty sure Peripheral was 2014. But yeah, that was another one that was like a William Gibson book. He's still doing stuff. I think he's got... because there was The Peripheral, and then there was like one more after that that came out like right around COVID. And then I think I don't know if he's doing another one or not, but that's like, when I was getting back into Cyberpunk and stuff, I was like, oh, you know what? I want to go back and see what William Gibson's been doing and stuff. And then I saw The Peripheral with its weird gray cover, and I was like, I have no clue what this is.
Yeah, but it is. I just looked up. Yep, definitely based on the book.
Oh, cool.
nice. So even better, if you want to revisit like another adaptation of his work on screen, It's there, The Peripheral. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. So
that's awesome.
Very cool. Well, looking forward to more good content coming from people that we don't see, which is great. Now we get into something that's a little bit less strange and weird, and just we get into the absurd, and that's Deadpool and Wolverine. We've got the trailer. You know, that happened. I saw it. I went and saw Dune Part 2 yesterday. The trailer was on the screen again. I'm so excited for this movie. You know, we're getting back to the weird Fox Marvel, which is going to be so interesting to see how that translates. It's R-rated. But more details are coming out. We're going to get more of these details coming out as we get closer to the movie. And we are finding out about who the villain is. And this was spotted by Culture Crave. The copyright has listed an actress's name. She's going to be playing Cassandra Nova. So Cassandra Nova, and this is really spoiler for a really old, you know, probably 20-year-old comic, you know, introduction. I believe it was either in Grant Morrison's X-Men when he relaunched it, or Astonishing X-Men. I think it was Grant Morrison's. But basically, this character is the fraternal twin of Charles Xavier. In the womb, Charles Xavier looked at his twin and realized she was evil. And what does a fetus do in the womb? Kills that clone or twin of yourself. And surprisingly, in the comics, that wasn't the end of her. Well, apparently, she was able to form herself full self into a person, and that became Cassandra Nova. She is also bald as a cue ball, and she is a bad mamma jamma, is the best way to put it. Very cool, interesting villain. And the fact that she's going to be in Wolverine and Deadpool, or Deadpool and Wolverine, it shouldn't shock me, but it still is, because I don't know if anybody, unless you're a big, you know, X-Men geek, would know about the character. So with that, Logan, what are your thoughts on bringing a very obscure villain into this big movie?
I have so many questions. There's so many questions. Like, because I don't know if Logan is canon in Deadpool or not. Like, as far as like the Logan movie with X-23, I don't know if like old Charles is still old, or if Deadpool 3 is going to like pull young Charles back into the idea. Cause I'm like thinking like, okay, well, she's a twin, but she's obviously the antagonist here. So how is that going to look? Because Charles from like Logan was very enfeeble and, yes, you know, in a wheelchair most of the time. And I'm like, well, I don't imagine that is the way to really showcase Deadpool's power or you know, his skills outside of just being able to make fun of her for her bald head, maybe. Yeah, I don't probably know. So I'm, yeah, and like, why I guess in this case it makes me wonder if the reason why they would do that is because I guess Wolverine is the antagonist in this, and that's where the I don't know, like I'm trying to work it out in my head. So I'm guessing that's The only thing I can think of is it's one of those like Weapon X situations where Wolverine is mind controlled and having to do the bidding of Nova, and Deadpool has to stop Wolverine without killing him. I'm imagining, if that's even a thing, like how do you take two people that can't die and pit them against each other with blades? And I just don't, I mean, I want to see that, but it sounds like a 4-hour movie. But that's interesting. It feels like a very kind of manipulative plot line that they're going to have, like her doing stuff and to try and, you know, use the tool of Xavier against the X-Men in this case. But dude, I'm here to watch it regardless. Like their Deadpool series is golden in my mind, and I don't think that they write a bad script. The humor is always spot on, so I'm looking forward to it. What about you though?
Oh, I'm all down. And it's funny because my son is now 18. So he had got a chance to see Deadpool. I did want to show him like Once Upon a Deadpool, because I never saw that, but it's the, you know, the edited, and I want to see how do they pull that off.
Heavily
like,
edited.
Are they just doing like confetti versus blood? I don't know. I was kind of interesting. And are they just like, you know, putting word balloons over their face when they drop an F-bomb? I don't know. I want to see that though eventually. And we're actually going to do a retrospective on like select X-Men movies as we get close to this movie. So we're going to cover like some of the original Fox series. We're going to cover like the Wolverine, Good and the Bad and the Ugly, and then all the Deadpool films. So to get myself up to speed again, get myself in like, oh, did I miss anything? But with this, yeah, we don't know what Wolverine's role really is in this film yet. The only time we didn't even see his face. We see his shadow and his claws come out. That's it. We see the back of another Wolverine that we assume is Patch from Madripoor, which we're hearing rumors it might even be like not even the Wolverine we know. I've heard like Daniel Radcliffe, because there's been jokes about him becoming Wolverine as he's ripped. And, you know, Daniel Radcliffe is like 5'4". And Wolverine in the comics, if you want to get nerdy, is like 5'4"-ish. So that would be kind of fun, too, to like not every Wolverine we see is the Wolverine we know of with Hugh Jackman, because there was, you know, originally the original actor who was supposed to play Wolverine was blanking on his name. He played the villain in Mission Impossible 2, I believe.
He had to bring up Mission Impossible 2, the one that I never remember. Okay.
Well, nobody does. There was lots of masks, and there was a joust with jumping motorcycles.
Yeah.
John Woo's. Poor John Woo. Yeah, there we go. That's I think
still really movie in Hollywood like, you have to do. Fantastic guy, but yeah, I don't know that was the movie. Western films, wanted.
I don't think were his cup of tea. I think you should have stick with Asian cinema. But maybe we'll get another chance. But yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I don't know what they're going to do, and the fact that they're bringing in some weird to this, I love it, because that's the way it should be. He is Marvel Jesus, as he said. So this is the big movie of the summer, July. You know, I was surprised it didn't have the 4th of July slot, but it does have the late July, which is still a lot of time to make a lot of movie money and see it lots of times. Next story, we're getting more details about James Gunn's debut for the new Gods and Monsters universe he's setting up. We have known the title, or we thought that we knew the title of his movie was going to be Superman Legacy. It's now changed to just Superman. Now, if you think, hey, wasn't there a Superman movie from Christopher Reeve? Well, that was called Superman the Movie. So a little bit different, but going back to the basics. And they didn't call him the Superman like they did with Batman, then the Batman. So, because it'd be weird, because the Superman... But
I can't with the Batman is one of those ones where I'm just like, why did they it sounds odd to call it the Batman. Yeah, I don't know why that bothers me.
Yeah. Even though he's walking around talking to Jim Gordon with all the cops around. So it's not like he's a monster. You don't know who he is. He's your contractor.
Before they're going to have a Batman series. It's going to be like a Batman. L Batman. I'd watch L Batman though.
or Batman question mark? Who knows?
Yeah.
So with that, that's one change. So this movie, we finally have got most of the cast. James Gunn has been doing some really good social media on it. Brought in a lot of the actors, showing what they, you know, all the cast together, which is fun. He's really embracing it. Although I don't know how good that is for his mental health to be that embracing and taking down like rumors and all this stuff. That's got to be exhausting and still be creative. But very exciting, and we're getting a new casting that's been released, and that is Perry White, you know, the overzealous newspaper man, kind of the inspiration for J. Jonah Jameson with, you know, got to get the lead and get out there, Kent and Lane, and I need the deadline by this date. The last Perry White we got was Lawrence Fishburne, I think. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's who it was.
That was the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe there was someone else in Lois, Superman and Lois, the new TV series. Maybe there's one in there. I'm not sure. In this, we are getting Perry White, who is being played by a very good actor. His name is Wendell Pierce. He was in The Wire. He's a heavy, and that's great, because it's great to have someone play off of these characters. And the fact that Perry White is in this means that we're probably going to get some duality between Clark Kent and Superman, not just all Superman, but we're going to get a lot of his active life, being a reporter, but also being Superman, which I love the interplay, because that's really what Superman is. He's duality of Clark Kent which is the life he wants, and Superman is the person he is, as being, you know, a person out of this planet and trying to establish himself. So we knew know that David Corn-Sweat is going to be Clark Kent, Rachel Brosnahan, Lois Lane, Nicholas Holt, Lex Luthor. He already shaved his head. Good man. Nathan Fillion is Green Lantern. That makes my heart. Now, I said Green Lantern. I'm assuming it's Guy Gardner. I'm 100% sure Guy Gardner, maybe. Makes sense, though. Cocky guy. Isabel Merced is Hawkgirl. Eddie Gathegi as Michael Holt, Mr. Terrific. Good thing about this character, Eddie Gathegi, he played one of the mutants who died in X-Men First Class. I'm trying to remember his name. He was the ability to like absorb powers and things like that. I can't remember what his name
was. Oh, I know who you're talking about, and I have no clue. I can't even remember who that was, but yeah.
I love the character, but he was killed off so early. I'm like, oh no, he was really cool. And then we got Skylar Gazondo as Jimmy Olsen, Maria Gabriela de Faria. Wow, that's a name. As the engineer, that is a new character. Sarah Sampiosa as Eve Tessemacher, who is a throwback to the old original Superman series with Miss Tessemacher. And Terrence Rosemore as Otis, which was Lex Luthor's goofy, henchman in it, played by Ned Beatty. So it's weird that they're going deep and kind of covering new and old, which I love. So I've spoke a lot, Logan. I'm excited for this. What do you think? I know your compatriot over on XCP is a huge DC fan, but sometimes I find he falls into the liking the things of DC. I'm like, really, you like that? So sometimes questionable at times.
Luke is unabashedly a super fan of DC, especially if it's Superman himself. It doesn't matter what they put out. He will, even if he knows he's going to hate it, he will still love and support it because it is just of that DC fandom. I myself am very much reserved when it comes to these. I don't know. I grew up with the old school Supermans, you know, like from the 70s and stuff. Like those were my Superman. So every time like there has been a new Superman movie, I haven't really had like a desire to watch it. I don't know why. And part of that might just be because like there's not really a thing that Superman can do outside of what he always does that really impresses me. He always kind of, I know what I'm getting with Superman. So it's only when they like, you bring in like Lex Luthor, which the fact that Nicholas Holt is going to be Lex Luthor excites me just because of how much I actually really like Nicholas Holt from like Mad Max and X-Men First Class.
Beast. Yeah.
He's Beast. And it was just like, I really like him as just like an actor in general. So I'm really curious to see like how he does with Lex Luthor. But really like Lex is the character that is the interesting part to this for me. I'm glad that it sounds like they're going back to basics with Superman. They're looking to introduce a new Superman. I think a lot of folks are probably going to kind of be upset because I think for a lot of folks, Henry Cavill is their Superman. And I don't know, having lost Christopher Reeves, it's like, I'm okay with whoever they want to throw in for Superman. Cause it will never be the same for me. So I'm not going to assume that whatever Superman comes in is the one that has to beat the one that I have. But I think this is really cool that they want to bring in all these characters. Just looking at some of the names here, I recognize from other shows that I've seen and others. I mean, it's really awesome to see James Gunn really kind of go for this. I'm kind of concerned though, because it is James Gunn, that his kind of like his type of humor is a humor that I think kind of betrays Superman's kind of tone. I think tone will be a big question in this film, and I'm a little worried about that just because I know like what James Gunn usually does with movies versus what I think a lot of people expect out of a Superman show or TV or a movie. So that's what kind of concerns me.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because James Gunn he tries to balance humor and heart pretty well, but yeah. He rarely does he have like the main character is like the straight man. And Superman is very much the straight man. every once in a while you get like Superman tell a joke, and it's like, oh wait, Superman can tell a joke. So it's not the norm, but it is every once in a while you get a real wink eye, because he's like, oh, it's kind of reminds me of like Captain America, right? Getting Captain America right as kind of like that straight man. And then he finally like picks up, you know, on a joke or, you know, language,
yeah,
or you know, those type of little jokes can work. So I'm curious. I think James Gunn, of all the people that can do an ensemble piece, he does it really well. And there's going to be a lot of characters in this, because he said wants to be Superman living in a world where it's not like, oh, it's the origin story, or superheroes, oh, are just finally emerging. They're just like, this is a world of superheroes, and there are going to be people. And he said there's going to be a reason why they are showing up. Not just to say, hey, look, it's that person, like a Ready Player One, like, you know, all the verbal, like, or the visual, like, insanity of, like, hey, look,
eye candy.
So, yeah. So I'm curious they are going to link Superman, like, to the Authority, which I find very interesting. And that's another book that's, you know, kind of characters with a certain morality, how they deal with issues with the supernature, extraterrestrial nature, that it could be a challenge to Superman, like the you know, good cop, bad cop duality. So maybe that's where Superman will play, kind of like the person you play off of as the stray man. So if that works, I'm interested, but we'll see. Yeah, James Gunn hasn't played a character like that, like fully respectful of the character, but also trying to bring new facets of him to life. So we'll see. I mean, this is July 25th, I believe. So essentially the same weekend as the next year as where Wolverine Deadpool. So I'm hoping this comes back, because I love Superman, but rarely has he been given the justice he deserves, because either the script was bad, the director didn't understand what to do with him. So I hope this comes together.
I want to pull back a little bit and kind of address like what the hopes and concerns of this film are kind of doing. Do you think that with this being like James Gunn's approach to Superman, do you think that this will actually kind of revitalize faith in the DC MCU or the DC EU as far as like films go?
That's a good question, because it's like Marvel's in that spot right now, right? Where it's like Marvel's dead. Oh, it's back alive if they get a little bit of clarity. DC hasn't. DC has had more fumbles than they've had wins, which is very frustrating for me as a fan. And with this, if they can show, I guess, a different take on these characters that balance, like I said, the humor, heart, the excitement, and can retain the core of what Superman is. We haven't gotten a lot of that so much, because we focused on like Superman as the bad guy, or Superman kind of not being a part of a larger thing. And we've never really gotten Superman except for the Snyderverse films, where he's had to play off of other superheroes. And that was in a dire light, because it was like, we got to know him, and then, oh, he's dead now. And we're walking away, and now we're revering him. Like, you didn't give me a reason to care for him, because he was around for so little. And when we did see him, he was killing Zod. So, I mean, I'm hoping this way we get to see more fleshed out version that we loved with Christopher Reeve, or maybe people loved with Smallville, or even the most recent series with that's on the CW that people really love, the take on Superman. So I'm hoping we get more of that on the screen that reminds people why Superman's cool. He's not just the Boy Scout that can do anything. We've gotten like Superman 64, even with video, like we can't even give him justice in the video games. So it's like, and he's a hard nut to crack, but I tell you, some of the best stories I've read on Superman are amazing, but I think people just aren't aware of them. So we'll see,
I agree with you. I think it's one of those things. I think you kind of nailed it right there. I think one of the things that I've loved about the Superman character is when Superman can't be Superman, and when Superman is forced to kind of stand by and watch stuff happen as Clark Kent, and just hope that he'll have an opportunity to be able to go get out of wherever he's at, to be able to like act as Superman. So there's so many times where like I think of like Superman tied up as Clark Kent with Lois Lane. Well, it's like he could break the ropes and just fly off and you know, stop the bad guys and stuff, but he can't because of this persona that he's trying to keep so that he can have a normal life. And that to me is more compelling than how many bad guys he can fake punch in an action scene. and like how many times he can take a blow from a you know, Zod or something like that. Like the times where there, that moral conundrum, that moral issue of like, how do I live my life while also trying to protect people and not give up the selfish thing that I want, which is to have a normal life for the sake of innocent lives. Cause it's obvious, like he can't save every life everywhere yeah. on Earth at the same time. That's one of the best things that you can do for like a Captain America or a Superman character. So having that sense of like peril between what you can and can't do based on what you selfishly want versus what you know is the right thing to do. Those are the moments that I think Superman really stretches beyond just what his physical strength is. And that's what I think I've been missing a lot of in a lot of these DC films. I don't feel like there is that sense of like, oh, well, it's Superman, so he's just going to fly around and stop everything, as opposed to what if he can't do that? And not because of kryptonite.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so excited about partnering him with a world of superheroes where he realizes he can't do it all by himself, and trusting yeah. and building those relationships and understanding where he is not the smartest guy in the room and he needs abilities that he doesn't have. And, you know, that's where I see hopefully where this will go. And yeah, it's just kind of like Batman. We rarely get to see really the cool detective side of Batman, or we don't always get to see Batman yes. fighting the weird fantastical villains we know he loves. So, you know, and it's like, yeah. I want to see more of those sides. So the Batman family coming together, you know? So we'll see if we get more of that with that. And I hope we do. Yeah. Cause they definitely need a win, and a new take is never bad. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. We got a year though, and we got to be hopeful. Hopefully, maybe.
Yeah,
Luke, you aren't abandoned. The Snyderverse is going away, but come back. I know you've been hurt. Oh well. Next, we get into a movie I really don't know if anybody ever thought would happen, and it's happening. That is Tron: Ares. This is the newest entry into the Tron series. It's going to production, like actually went in production in January. So it's real. And we got our first image. And quite honestly, it looks cool. It looks like it could be from like a video game, like a character you've yeah. seen before. Definitely has a look. This is going to have Jared Leto in it. And it is considered this is the part. I'm not 100% sure. Is this a sequel? Is this a reboot? What is this?
This is most definitely a sequel to Legacy. Okay. Oh man, this film, I'm glad that there is a Neutron movie on the horizon. I really loathe the fact that Jared Leto is the one that is leading this. This man is weird.
Parts.
So I was looking deep into this, because if you don't know, if you can't tell, if you're not watching the video version of this, in the back of my in my room, I have a row of pops that are all Tron based. I have light cycles. I have collector's edition figures. I have a Tron Mickey image or like painting that's framed back there. I have you can't tell because of the actual cat that is in the way, but the wall has the original 1982 Tron poster with a clue a data disc hanging underneath of it. That's a Frisbee. I love Tron. I love Tron the way someone who says loves Tron knows about Beck and loves Beck from the Uprising series. So if you want to question my opinions on this,
was that Disney XD or I can't remember what
XD.
It was
on. It was much maligned because of the way that they released it. But Elijah Wood as Beck in Tron Sweet. Uprising is one of the best series out there that no one knows about.
I didn't watch it. I don't know why.
It's so good. It's so complex. You want to talk about depth with characters? Tron Uprising has depth. Nice. Imagine the war that is going on with Clue reaching out with his armies and taking over the grid because he's so frustrated with Flynn and what's been going on with the ISOs. And then you take that kind of like fear of what the ISOs are and you mix that in there. And then you throw that story or that world into a story where characters are just engineers. They're just mechanics working on tanks, working on buildings and stuff like that. And they are just dealing with this oppression that is going on. And that is like, that's the kickstart for this. Then you throw in Tron into the mix and you get into some crazy stories. I love Tron. I think this image is freaking cool. I hate what they've done with the data disk. It is a triangle. The data disk should just be a circle. It is intended to be a data disk. You throw it. It has function. So why is this data disk look like a triangle? Now, on the back of it, it has a little embossedness, a little imprint on there that says Dillinger, which to me goes with a story that I actually came up with back when Tron Legacy was, before Tron Legacy was released. I had this great idea of what would be an awesome story for Tron to deal with. Well, Dillinger, the original CEO of the facility, or no, I keep calling. Yes. And it was a fantastic actor. Dillinger, great, great character, was, you know, thrown out of the company because he stole the games that were now the golden cow for this company that was being run. I can't remember the name of the company for some reason. And Flynn was the one that had actually created them, but he had created them on company property, which technically nowadays would have been considered company IP. So he wouldn't have had any rights to actually do it, but this was the 80s. Yeah. So nobody even thought about those kind of legalities that had been involved with it. But regardless, Dillinger spurned. It makes sense to have Dillinger's son, who in Tron Legacy is just a secondary character on the board of the Flynn Enterprise, and creating, you know, showing up like all of the OSs that are coming out and stuff. He's just this random, and they even got I can't remember his name, but he's a fantastic. I think he was in Peaky Blinders. He was the lead in Peaky Blinders. Cillian Murphy. Yes, he is Dillinger in Tron Legacy. And they just anything with him. He's fantastic. He's such a good character. And it's like, why didn't you do a story about Dillinger's son trying to get revenge against Sam because of Flynn taking over the company and stealing it from his father? That would be such a good origin story for Sam, because it would have a really rooted in the history of Tron villain. I see this image and I think, cool. Somebody actually had the idea to bring in Dillinger back into the story and get Clue out of the thing, because Clue is just a part of a very myopic grid that Flynn had created. And then the ISOs had come out as a result. And then we don't need to get into the whole reason about why Korra is able to come out and not just be a program, but she's actually flesh. I don't understand that, but I'm totally fine with whatever they want to do with this. I'm worried about Tron Ares, because Tron Ares to me is a story that I want to hear about Dillinger and what's going on with the son of Dillinger and Sam having to deal with that in the world of Tron. Jared Leto is weird. Yeah. Jared Leto is method. He goes too far. And I think that a lot of people who are, especially like of the Suicide Squad film, can attest and have attested to just how weird he is. Yeah, like
he sent like a rat to someone, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, he sent a dead rat to someone. So I'm worried about this film already. Then I look at the cast list of who they've got writing for this. And unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that they've written and a lot of the stuff that the director has done are all very mid.
Yeah, and I'm like, I saw that. Yeah,
And I think here's my theory. You've got Jared Leto, a very method actor who wants to do a film, who's been given the rights to be able to do a film. So what does he do? He hires on all the people that need big blockbuster experiences to really kind of like get they're hungry for that kind of money, right? They're hungry for that kind of experience on there. So he hires a bunch of mid writers and directors who aren't going to stop him with his stupid method acting. And they're just going to let him do whatever he wants to do. And we're just going to get a really mid Tron movie out of it. And I'm just like, no, this is my baby. Why are you doing this to my fandom? So I've gone on for about 10 minutes now. I'm sure you have probably feelings on this.
No, I as a kid, I remember seeing Tron in my high school gym on a rainy day because we couldn't go outside. blew me away that this was actually a thing. The first CGI movie, Disney actually put this forward, especially after the failure of Black Hole when that didn't work, you know, in response to Star Wars. The fact that Disney was still doing it, Disney was in a weird spot, but it was kind of cool to see Disney like try ideas that nobody else would. And so when Tron Legacy came out, I was so excited, you know, getting that soundtrack that was so evocative, the visuals finally, you know, leading into like, oh, this makes sense why it took so long. And then that movie, I enjoyed it. And I was like, well, what's going to happen next? Cause I'm into this. And obviously nothing happened. This movie's coming out 15 years later. And to your point, the fact that you see who's going to be behind it, directed, so it's Joachim Rønning, did Maleficent, Mistress of Darkness, which was the sequel, which was not very good, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, which quite honestly, I don't even remember which one that was. Was it the one with the weird, where Johnny Depp went insane and saw the crabs? Or was that a different
one? No, that was at World's End. Dead Men Tell No Tales is the one with Blackbeard. It's the guy. I hate that I'm blanking on this right now. But it's effectively the mermaid one where they have to go and find the Fountain of Youth, and okay. I'm blanking on the antagonist. Dead Men Tell No Tales.
So I'm looking at this.
Javier Bardem one. That was correct. The one with that was the one where it's Javier Bardem is playing the Spanish conquistador guy who hates pirates.
And that would have been the last one from 2017. So I actually don't know if I actually even saw that one because I was kind of feeling like a little bit pirated out at that point. But you know, I mean.
It's funny because they're talking about bringing him back as like a secondary character now, or not Salazar, but they're bringing Johnny Depp back for another Pirates film, which if they do, they should do another Pirates film. They should 100% create new characters. Probably not the one from the kids of the, yep. I'm not going to go into it, but
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see that, but sorry, I got off on a trail. You were talking about the director for Tron.
Yeah, so that's the first and then you know the writers behind this. We'll see. No one from the last movie is involved in this, which is also another interesting. And I'll just give the plot line really quick because that's going to be interesting. Apparently, in the new installment, a highly sophisticated program, Ares, is sent from the digital world to the real world on a dangerous mission. This will mark the world's first encounter. So that's weird. It's like a reverse Tron. So like going into the real world, getting created, and like, is this going to be like a Terminator? I don't know. This is weird. And do we want to really be in like the real world? Kind of like when you have a He-Man movie and you're like, oh, by the way, we can't afford to do Eternia, so we're going to have you sit in Ohio. I don't want that.
Although I do love that blade guy. I can't remember his name, but he had two blades.
He was the one off created for. Yeah, he was created for the movie and like, hey, new toys. Like, no, I don't want him. I want Triclops.
Fair.
So, So,
I don't know, this
is going to have to be, you know, when the first trailer comes out, that will tell a lot about this movie. The cast looks interesting. Cameron Monaghan, you know, obviously our favorite guy who played kind of the Joker in Gotham, played, you know, our new favorite Jedi. So I'm glad to see him get bigger roles on screen. But other than that, the cast looks interesting. And if Jared Leto can be contained, you know, that's the question, right? We'll see how he goes. Yeah.
The last time he was contained was Dallas Buyers Club. And even then, everyone was like, are you healthy? Are you still good? Like, are you eating? You want a Twinkie or something?
He was still doing a lot. Yeah. He was still doing a lot. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But we'll see where that goes. We'll see where that goes. Okay. So, next story. This one is kind of funny because talk about a movie that I think people thought was never going to happen is essentially the Crow reboot. It is Bill Skarsgård. You may know him as Pennywise in It. He's played, he was basically the big bad in the last John Wick film. And just a great actor who kind of morphs into whatever you need him to be. And he's okay playing small parts, big parts. But he's always a little weird. He never plays just the normal guy, you know, in a rom-com. That's okay. We need our oddballs. We've got the first look at this film, and as we look at the picture, of Bill Skarsgård. The things that came into my mind, let's see, what did I say? I said he was like Machine Gun Kelly tied with the Joker from the Suicide Squad, and I forgot something else, but doesn't look like the Crow in the comics, or even Brandon Lee. So I'm trying to think if there's even anything about who is doing this film, like the talent involved. It's got FKA Twigs also in a role, and this is supposed to be Eric Draven again versus doing something different with the Crow.
I'm very curious about this. I'm going to be 100% honest with people right now. Like, growing up in the 90s, like, Crow was a spiritual awakening for the goth in me. Yeah,
that soundtrack.
Like, yes. Woo. It was amazing. Like, we had like the Crow, and then it was like Mortal Kombat, and we were just living in the world of best.
Yes, movie. Starship Troopers too. It's like they're all together at the same time. It's weird world. Yeah.
It's it's so weird because as I look at this, I'm like, I don't even remember what the Crow plot was. Like, I'm pretty sure it was a revenge story because
it was.
Yeah. He was killed and he was going to go protect his girlfriend because and stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just watched the movie
last summer.
Oh, really?
Just to remember, because we did a thing called Does It Hold Up? Because I remember for myself, I loved the movie, but I hadn't really rewatched it again in years. And I'm like, you know what? It actually does hold up pretty well considering it's 30 years old.
That's good.
Not every movie in the genre is allowed that. So yeah, it was Eric Draven was killed trying to protect his I believe wife at the time, Shelley. And okay. I'm blanking the night. It's in Detroit. They have this thing where basically the night before Christmas or Halloween, hell breaks loose. And that happened. They broke in. Bad guys. Yep. And then he reemerges through the power of the Crow to create revenge on a lot of these characters who did all of the work, all the death and everything like that. Very fun, very cool, very moody. Alex Proyas, who, you know, directed a lot of music videos, did Dark City, you know, great combination, did music videos at the time back in the day, and a great soundtrack. And obviously the tragic death of Brandon Lee on set where he died and they actually were able to finish the film, you know, without really great visual techniques to fill him in. But yeah, still holds up. Check it out. But yeah, that's the whole premise. You know, basically, it's a revenge film powered by the spirit of the Crow.
Do you think this is a weird question? Do you think with the technology that because we just got done talking about Tron Legacy and how Tron Legacy was one of the first films that I saw where they were able actually to like de-age someone and have it look relatively pretty convincing, like there wasn't too much as far as like the uncanny valley there. You think if they ever went back to the Crow, do you think they could do some of those films or do those portions where Brendan Lee was kind of like used body doubles and stuff? You think they could go back with AI and technology and kind of put him back in the way it was intended?
Ooh, that's a little, you know, that's the iffy part of like, you know, AI, you know, the hologram of Tupac, all of those things. Yeah. What was it? The old Marilyn Monroe in a Diet Coke ad. You know, would it make sense? I mean, do they have to get his, I'm assuming you'd have to get the Brendan Lee family to bless it. And would it just, who would it work for? I mean, would people be like,
it probably would be for no one.
Would you want that? I guess the question, and what would it do? Would it juice any sales? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's where you'd go. And because this is a reboot, I mean, essentially we're just getting the tale updated for modern day, but I don't know if that's the right path. In the comics, there were more than one Crow. Basically, the Crow was the actual spirit of the Crow was the embodiment that would come forward and move to a new story and a new protagonist. So it wasn't necessarily it was just Eric Draven. He did his tale. It was over and done. It moved on to another person, basically, as the spirit of vengeance. It's kind of like the indie version of Ghost Rider in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Which, oh, man, spirit of vengeance. Don't get me started on that one. That's a whole nother fandom I love. I'm really curious how this is going to play because I have faith in Bill Skarsgård as far as like an actor. Yes. But I don't know what they would want to tell in a Crow reboot. Like, would it take place during the time that the original Crow did, as far as like that era? Because I think that would work really well, because I think one of the failures of like modern day movies is that everyone has cell phones. So it's like you can't really, like, the speed of communication between people to warn them about something kind of supersedes like most supernatural powers that movies give heroes to be able to do stuff in. So removing some of the technology in films is a good way to kind of instill fear in characters who can be kind of segregated with like this situation where you're getting revenge. You want to try and single people out to kind of take them out and instill that kind of uncertainty of where the Crow is. So I'd be very curious to see like where they place this film time-wise, as they kind of like step into that world of the Crow and where it goes.
Yeah, I am curious too. I don't know really if it's necessary, what it brings to the table. Does the Crow resonate with people today that didn't have that touchstone? You know, soundtracks don't really feel like they're a thing much these days with movies, where it's like you get like the great soundtrack that we used to get. Mainly it's a cinematic score, and then maybe you get a couple of songs that drive it, but I don't know. I don't know if I need this. And I looked at the film director that's going to be doing this. His name is Rupert Sanders. He directed Snow White and the Huntsman, the much derided Ghost in the Shell of 2017.
Okay. That one. All right. Can we talk about Ghost in the Shell for a quick minute? I recognize that a lot of people didn't like the whitewashing that happened with Ghost in the Shell. Yeah. And B didn't like the change story. But if I'm looking at like a movie adaptation of a beloved animated movie that I fell in love with, and then fell in love with the manga, and then like the TV series and stuff like that, they did a pretty good job of you know, replicating a lot of what that original film had. And if I'm looking at someone who wants to reboot The Crow, and I'm looking at like what they did with, you know, the first half of Ghost in the Shell, where they kept it pretty darn close to source material, you know, with some liberties. I think that there could be some respect paid to Brendan Lee's memory with a reboot of The Crow. I'm not going to rule that out, because I look at like what I thought of Ghost in the Shell. I was like, you know, it's Scarlett Johansson, so that's a plus, but it's also a minus, because I think there are much better actors out there who could have played Major Kusanagi. But at the same time, they nailed some of the scenes in that movie from the original animated show or movie. And I was like, it was kind of cool to watch. So I would be kind of curious to see like what a Crow reboot would do from someone whose work is like stealing stuff from the past and creating a new representation of it without that much variance.
It will be curious to see where this goes. It's coming out in June, and literally we have one image. So that's not always a great sign either, that we don't have a trailer yet. I mean, mixed bag probably at best. Maybe it's like, yeah, we got to get this thing out because we need to make money off of it. And we'll see if it gets some publicity and how the trailer goes. But you know what? Summer, usually I see a lot of films. So I will probably see it just for curiosity, unless the trailer blows me away. And it's like, oh yeah, I got to see this. But I will probably see regardless. I didn't see the Edward Furlong Crow sequel. So I'm not that tied to the franchise that I'm not going to be picky when other things happen. Well,
I just wanted to, I think you bring up a really good point though, that I don't know how this is going to resonate with like new generations of kids. Cause goth seems very out. Emo is definitely dead. And I don't know how are like 90s fashion's back, but it's like the big jeans and stuff. I don't know how many kids are going to be jumping into watch.
Guy Liner never dies. Guy Liner never dies.
It's fair.
We'll see. Yeah. Oh, well, that is it for the news this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed our discussion. We went deep in these. This is a lot of fun. I love it. And good to have somebody who knows his way around the world of nerds. So we're going to get into the next segment of the show, and that is the Geek Easy, where we geek out about the things we love. But before we do that, we've got an ad, so please listen and be interested. Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geek Easy, drinks are poured for Ben's plan, and we are ready to get our nerd on. So Logan, what do you got for me this week?
I started up the Avatar series. I was very interested to see like what this was going to be like, because it wasn't until probably a year ago that I had actually watched the original Avatar: The Last Airbender series. And when I started it, my wife and I sat down, we watched the entire series through, and then we immediately jumped into Legend of Korra and fell in love with the world and the characters from it. So when I found out that like Avatar: The Last Airbender was getting a real, what do we even call these? Like they call them like in person. Live action. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Live action reboot of it. That was going to be 8 episodes. I was very concerned about what they were going to do with that. And then they started to show images of like the cast, and I was like, these look really good. The costumes look fantastic. The actors look spot on. Sokka looks exactly like Sokka from the cartoon. Sounds just like him too. It's insane. Like, I don't know where they found that kid, but he grew up and he's like, I think I'm going to be Sokka my life. And so that was fantastic. But I've been watching the first few episodes, and I definitely have issues with the acting. I don't think, and this is the case with a lot of movies and TV where you bring in a young cast, they just don't have the experience to be able to convey the emotion that needs to be conveyed. It's one of the benefits of animated films is you can bring in a young sounding voice actor who can have the experience to be able to emote and have those emotions conveyed through animation. And when you have kids, they don't always have that experience. So watching Aang in this show, I'm thinking it really feels like Christian Haydenson in episode one of Star Wars. And I'm like, you're adorable. You're absolutely adorable.
Oh, you mean Jake Lloyd?
Or Jake Lloyd. Not yeah, Jake Lloyd.
Christian Haydenson, he struggled a little bit too.
Yeah, he did. He did too. To be fair, but yeah, Jake Lloyd. It definitely makes me, and I'm gonna have to correct myself to my wife on this one. But yeah, I feel like he's right for the role. He's just not experienced enough to be able to convey it. That mixed with a sense of them mumbling. I don't know what it is about. TV and movies nowadays, but like actors are getting away with mumbling way more than they should be. And I'm just like, just enunciate, just please, just enunciate, get the words out. Just please get the words out. But those are my, issues.
Oh, what's up? I was going to say, funny you say that. I saw, watched a great like segment on, I think it was CBS Sunday Morning about sound mixing, or maybe it was a video. Apparently sound mixing is just not, it's not a big thing these days. Like Christopher Nolan, he doesn't want to even sound mix anymore. He's like, you can't understand anyone. It's like, that's so bizarre, especially as people, you know, I have to put a lot of closed captioning on these days because that the sound mixing is horrible. I don't know why.
What was the movie Oppenheimer came out, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Oppenheimer. I hate Oppenheimer. I really dislike Oppenheimer because one, the sound mixing is terrible. Two, the characters, like there's a whole lot of like praising of a guy that created the atom. I don't really know why that story is the story we wanted to tell, but it's like the sound mixing has just absolutely been terrible over like the last 5 to 10 years. It's been insane. And so it's like I have to sit there and I'm like changing, you know, I've got like a really nice TV. I keep changing the audio settings to try and understand it. And I have tinnitus, but I still have pretty dang good hearing. Like I can still listen and hear a lot of stuff. And I'm really good at picking out voices and stuff. But my wife, she needs to turn the volume up because she can't hear what people are saying a lot of the time. And we tend to watch stuff with captions from time to time, but I love to have that immersive nature, that the pure sense of just watching the cinema and not having anything visually distracting me. I'm privileged in that sense, and I recognize that. But it was one of the issues that I had with this show is that the sound mixing is so off, and I don't know what is going on, but the media that's coming out nowadays just does not take that into account. Yep. And absolutely. I don't think that it's up to the TVs to have AI sound to be able to balance that. It's like, if you have a setting in your TV that says reduce loud noises, that's a sign that this is a badly mixed series. So that's otherwise, outside of that, Avatar, like the actual show itself, has to take some liberties because there was only 8 episodes, and I don't know how much they're going to get through in those 8 episodes, but it's a pretty darn good series. The costumes are amazing. The environments are fantastic. The CG could be a little bit better. The acting could be a little bit better, but it's great. It's adorable. I love Avatar. So that's what I've been watching lately.
I will tell you, I've heard people that are, you know, reviewing the show now, and they said the last episode, and I haven't seen it yet, so I've heard this, the last episode, they said they saved up their budget for that episode, apparently. So they went full hog, and I do appreciate the bringing to life the martial arts with the airbending. I have always loved that, and the fact that it looks like, even the opening sequence is pretty cool, between the earthbender who's escaping and the Fire Nation. I thought that was, when I saw that, I'm like, you know what? I think I'm in. And to your point, I think, I do worry. I've heard a little bit, there's a little bit like, and hopefully this will improve, because I know the series is going to get more seasons, but the balancing of humor and heart and the dour. And I've always felt like that's a hard thing to cover, but you have to have the heart, the humor, to make Avatar truly feel like Avatar versus just, you know, dour people and death is happening. Because you got to balance that, because, you know, Aang is a young person, and he's goofy at times, and you got goofy animals that do things that just make you smile. And some of the sibling, you know, if you've got a sibling, you know, between Katara and Sokka, they annoy each other, and that's part of it too. So I'm glad you're liking it. I'm only in episode one, so I'm like, I want to watch more, of course. But
I think you nailed it with the desire to have the humor with the dour. Like I'm, because Sokka right now is the one that is holding that up. He is the one championing that cause in the series, and I hope that the rest of them kind of find that as they move through the series, because that's most definitely something that I'm wanting, that I miss from the original cartoon.
Very cool. I'm gonna watch more. I like what they've done with it, so I'm in your court. I think it's not perfect, but hey, it's got to be better than the movie. So, well, very cool. So you've also been reading something.
Yeah, I didn't know if we wanted to go into this, but I am a huge Gargoyle fan, and there's a comic book series that's out, and so I've been reading through Dark Ages as well as the original run, just collecting those as much as possible. I think there's I just did a Kickstarter for the original run of Gargoyle comics that came out, but Gargoyles to me is a prized franchise. It's one of those ones where I learned what Shakespeare was because of Gargoyles. You know, I found out about Macbeth through Gargoyles and stuff like that. So I've been reading through that. It's one of those just like I don't expect anyone to really pick up on it or fall in love with it or anything like that. But for me, it's just a comfort food. I love the clan. I love, you know, Elisa and Xanatos and the characters that they've brought, the depth that they bring to the relationships that they have with each other and stuff. It's just one of those series that if you want well-rounded characters who have to make, you know, tough choices and have to determine like where their morality lies, I think Gargoyles is a fantastic show. It's a fantastic comic book series. Greg Wiseman's been the one that's kind of leading up this resurgence of Gargoyles. It's really come back to life ever since Disney Plus, much like with Tron Uprising. A lot of people are finding the cartoon now and having a comic book, having the two current comic book runs and a third coming. It's really impressive to see just how much people are really falling in love with this IP in general. And Greg Wiseman, who's the creator of it, being able to really go back and tell the stories that he wanted to forever ago, back in the 90s when it was like popular. This was Disney's version of the Batman. So if you watched WB, you know, kids growing up and you found the Batman cartoon series like back in the day, and you thought like, I really love this, the Gargoyles is effectively Disney's version of that. And it speaks a lot to Greg Wiseman's ability to write. And you know, he's done Justice League content in the past with Young Justice League I blanked on what it's called, but he's been writing comic book stuff forever. And this is a great testament to just his own world and his own characters and what he's done with them.
That's awesome. I think I already talked to you about this, but I want to talk about Gargoyles more. So I know I reached out to you about doing one. So I just have to figure out a time, and especially maybe around when something big is happening. I know there's going to be a live action Gargoyles TV series, I believe, on Disney Plus. Which could be interesting. But I think we need to talk more about Gargoyles, because that's what I want to do. I want to highlight series and things that maybe are below the radar, but kind of talk about why people love them, why they resonate, and kind of like the, you know, how you would recommend people getting into that. So that's one of the things we do in our Spotlight show. So I think we're going to do a follow-up with that, Logan, and we'll get geeky about Gargoyles.
I'd love to, man. That's a series that I'll watch any day. That's like a comfort food for me, man.
Awesome. Well, thank you for those recommendations, and folks, check those out if you want. And for myself, these are pretty easy ones. Shogun just launched on Hulu. This is based on the James Clavell novel. There was already a Shogun adaptation in the, I want to say, early 80s. Really? And I would have to look to see if it was good or not, but it was 80s. So it's, you know, it's a mixed bag of like, it's Dallas, it's Dynasty. And here's a show about, you know, 16th century Japan. And basically it's a struggle between the fiefdoms as the Shogun has passed away. His heir is too young to run Japan. So now you've got the rival fiefdoms essentially fighting for what is going to happen in the meantime. So the premise is really cool. Then you layer on the fact that there happens to be a Westerner, someone from England, who has heard about all of these potential treasures around Japan and the Orient, and they want to tap into those. And that leads us into one of the protagonists of this. It's just the very beginning. It's not like a surprise. And that's kind of what brings us all in. And it is highly subtitled, so just be aware of that. that you will need to be reading subtitles because they are speaking Japanese. So you've got a mix of different people from different countries, Portuguese, Spanish, and English involved in this as well. As someone who loved Blue Eyes Samurai and dealing with, you know, ancient Japan and seeing a version of that kind of, and then seeing this version live action, wow, I'm just loving this era. And it makes me think of like Ghosts of Tsushima, and we've got the rise of Ronin coming. I'm like, I'm all in. I just love this. And after episode one, I'm like, wow, give me more. So the good news is, folks, if you want to watch a really cool historical piece that is fully, I'd say adult. I mean, there's some things where it's pretty graphic in certain ways. It's nudity, language. So I think we're getting more than we would have gotten in the 80s anyways on broadcast TV. So we're seeing that. The writing is excellent. The acting is fantastic. You'll see a lot of characters like, oh, I recognize that person. Just wonderful. And there are only two episodes out so far. I believe they're doing a weekly drops, so you can catch up. But it's an hour long. It's wonderful. It's on Hulu. I think it's on FX, and then it comes to Hulu. So if you're cable, I'm all in. I love what I've seen so far, and I hope it continues the pacing. I think it's 8 episodes long. So very, very cool. Maybe I'll check out the 80s version that was on CBS, and I'll probably be like, what was that? Because I'm assuming they all spoke English because they weren't going to put subtitles because people were like, I'm not going to read back in the day. but that is Shogun. So check it out. And then I just saw Dune 2. I'm not, no spoilers here, or Dune Part 2, not Dune 2. I was a huge fan of the first Dune film. Really will like what they brought forward. I found interesting things in the original film. I think David Lynch did a lot of David Lynch stuff, so it got a little weird. It focused on the weird side. Kind of took what he wanted from the story and did his own thing. You know, Sting and red hair and some very interesting choices. I've also watched a bunch of the... like there was a lot of miniseries. I remember Sci-Fi had the Children of Dune, which I enjoyed a lot too. And I think there were some other adaptations as well. So there's a lot out there, and you know, I don't know if anybody's nailed it all together, but it's a very dense book. Frank Herbert, I've not read the book, so I can't really compare it and say that. But I would say if you enjoyed Dune Part 1, but thought it was a little slow, didn't have enough action, this movie pushes up the action by all means, but has a lot of good character moments and goes deeper on the Fremen people and brings in some interesting characters. Now, there's one thing I will probably spoil, but it's such a dumb spoiler that I have to joke, because we know Austin Butler is in this movie. He played Elvis. He's in other things. And his voice in this, because we have Stellan Skarsgård, who plays the Baron Harkonnen. He's got that really... You know, he's got his own accent already, but then he's got that gravelly voice. And yeah. We've also got Dave Bautista, who's playing, I think he's the nephew of Baron Harkonnen. I can't remember if nephew, I think. And he's just doing Dave Bautista. He's not even doing like any type of fancy voice. He's put an accent. And then we've got Austin Butler, who he plays his other nephew, who's very creepy, very weird. I believe he's playing the same character that Sting played, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I'd have to look back, but his accent, yep. It's so weird. It's Elvis tied with like, Christian Bale's, Batman along with Dracula. It's such a weird mix. Cause I'm like, I don't know where he's going. First time I'm like, but is he just doing Elvis? Like, no, he's doing gravelly. And then he puts in a weird, like European accent. I can't even place where it's from. So it's such an odd choice.
That's so weird.
It is.
You
odd.
Still have. And to throw into that mix, you've got Javier Bardem still, who's coming in with his really thick accent.
Yes.
Into the mix as well, too. I never thought about it, but yeah, there's a lot of like really, really wild accents in that there series. Are, so
especially
far.
You got like, and they do explain it because like, oh, they say he's from the southern area where of Fremen and, you know, Zendaya. She's from the north, and maybe there's no accents. I don't know. Accents are a pet peeve with me in a lot of movies where it's like the prime example I always go to is the Willow series, which not good at all. But then you've got like these people. It's like, oh, they're speaking in British. But we've got this person just speaking plain old American.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can put it. It's like, why your mother was, yeah. I mean, where are you picking that up from? So it's like, I don't know. It's just so weird. It's inconsistency. And if they can explain it away, cool. If they don't though, then I'm like, maybe you needed a different actor that could pull off an accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say if you enjoyed the first Dune film, I think you'll enjoy this. I don't think this is going to make anyone who didn't enjoy Dune a fan. So buyer beware. But I would say there's more of what you enjoyed in the first film, but it's not going to change your mind on, I would say, the whole franchise. I will say, though, you don't have to stay for the end credits because there's nothing there. So you can just either watch the credits and enjoy it or walk away. I think people are so conditioned these days that they're expecting something there. And I'm like, nope, I know this. And I walked out. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I'm curious to see Dune 2. I definitely want to see like what they do with that. Because I can't remember the director, but Dave Villeneuve, I think is the director.
Villeneuve, yeah.
Villeneuve, thank you.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. I think he's really like he chews the scenery. Like he's comfortable just letting a character sit in a scene and just be there. Like you look at like Blade Runner 2042, wow, and you're just
that
like,
was an indulgent movie.
Yeah, it looks amazing, and you look and you're like, yeah, that dude wants to make a screenshot and just have that screenshot be the film, and they let him do it. So I was really curious like when they did Dune, because I thought I had a lot of trouble going through the book originally, the first book. Not I never even got into like the Child of Dune or anything, any of those. But the first movie was definitely an interesting film just in as general. So I'm curious to see like the action that you're talking about with Dune 2. Definitely feels a lot more up my alley. It's going to be a hard sell on my wife, who was very bored with the original and or the first film. And I honestly, I don't blame her, because it's one of those films that is just it's and the trouble with Dune is that they've got so many pronouns that they toss out you, that if you're not familiar with the series, you get lost in the words. And I think that was one of the biggest issues with the book as well, is it's like when you have
it's
so many,
Bene
like,
Gesserit. I don't know. It's a lady that speaks loud.
Yeah. Like there's so many little pronouns that they throw out to you that they do not like go into detail at all, that the book does, but it's like, you got to keep track of all that.
Yes.
It does a disservice to folks that are trying to get into the actual series, as opposed to just being something that is catering specifically to the fans.
Yeah, it's definitely you have to take notes. It's kind of like when you first start Game of Thrones, like how many houses are there? Who is who?
Oh, my God.
Keeping track. I mean, I need a chart for the thing and where are they at and what's this town called and why do they call that thing a thing? I don't know. Yeah, I'm just going to go with it. And, you know, maybe I'll remember that. Yeah. Yeah. I do sometimes get frustrated when the terminology or something else distracts your brain. So then you're like thinking too much on like, okay, that I got to remember that thing that's called, but then we're moving forward. Meeting new characters. So yeah. So I think if you enjoyed it, I do feel the pacing was better in this one. So maybe that's going to change the people. And I think, I like some of the new additions of the cast, and, I would say Dune Part 2, enjoy if you enjoy those things. So that is it for the Geekeasy. It's time to wrap up our gear, get our bags ready, and we're going to take a flight down to the place we call the Thunderdome.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. The mutants have been gathered for a topic or a game to be entertained. And this week, we're doing a topic. So I think we're in a very strong age of adaptations, either properties being in basically created for video games and vice versa. We're seeing a lot of cool video games finally come to adaptations. We haven't always got quality adaptations, especially in the video game realm. But I thought that we would talk about that because I think we've got some big things coming out with the Fallout series coming out in April. You know, that's going to be awesome. We have Last of Us Part 2 coming out in 2025. We're hearing about some other adaptations coming, the Mario movie, so on and so forth. And we don't always see it the other way. We don't always see a lot of properties get adapted for video games these days or handled well. I would say some of the most recent ones are like The Expanse, got a Telltale-like adaptation. When we get it, we get like the Sopranos game from like the from the PS3 era that was absolutely horrible. So it's a mixed bag at best. And hopefully we're going to move on and we'll get both good adaptations on both sides. So with that, Logan, so my first question to you is, what would be on your wish list for future adaptations of video games to another media format, TV, movie, or animation?
I would love, and it's funny because I put out a tweet about this and I didn't realize this was going to be the, I knew this was going to be a question, but I didn't realize at the time of tweeting that this would be a perfect example. I would love to have a movie, that is based around StarCraft. StarCraft is one of those worlds that very much like most sci-fi films, revolves around smaller characters like Star Wars, you know, kind of focusing in on like Luke, Leia, Han, and Vader. StarCraft is very much like that. There's a rebel of people who are outside of major factions who are having to deal with a huge war. And you're really in love with the characters like Jim Raynor and Kerrigan and Nova and just all the different cast members. Tychus is a perfect anti-hero in the series, and the cinematics that Blizzard do are some of the best. Like, they do some of the most top-notch cinematics ever. But there is most definitely like a world where I would love to see the story of StarCraft and StarCraft 2 brought to film as like a trilogy, and to give them the opportunity to really kind of expose those games and that world, in a sense that most people probably don't like playing RTS games or real-time strategy games. Most people don't like managing, like little units here and there, but also trying to do the macro of economics, unless you're just a diehard PC fan, especially from the 90s. So that's one where I think, like, you know, we got a Warcraft movie and it was all right. They took the wrong story and they tried to adapt it into a film, and then they changed the story of that. And I blame a lot of that also, you know, on Duncan, but as well as like Legendary and what they wanted, even with Chris Metzen, who's the creator of all that, kind of helming a lot of what they wanted to do. They still took too many liberties, I think, with the Warcraft movie. I think if I had my druthers, I would have a StarCraft movie that is telling the exact story of StarCraft in movie form, to really just pay homage to those characters and their depth and their story and their growth as humans and, or, you know, whatever, you know, Protoss, if you want, and just give that to the world. That would be probably my biggest wish.
What would you want it to be? Would you want it to be then live action movie? Is that the wheelhouse you'd want to go?
I think you could do any, actually. I think we saw like a little bit of this. If anyone's watched Ready Player One, you've already seen Jim Raynor in kind of CG and shooting around in his space marine outfit and stuff. I think that's something that you could go the route of as far as like CGI. But I think it would be kind of cool, especially like us looking at like Fallout now coming out as a TV series and what they're able to do with the power armor. I think that, even just cosplayers have made amazing versions of wearable armor that does not weigh a ton, that, you know, with stilts, you can actually look like representative of the scale of those suits that the Space Marines, you know, like little Terran Marine guys had back in the day. And you add with that Starship Trooper level CGI for the Zerg and Protoss, and I think you got yourself a pretty good chance at making a live action with that.
It's interesting, as we've seen like the Halo adaptation, where, you know, it's a mixed bag for a lot of people. Totally is. I think one of the things we do know, though, you feel like some of it is influenced, like certain things are sacrificed because of budget. You know, you can only do so much with what you got. So maybe a movie where you condense it that budget versus trying to make it like 18 hours long. You know that you're not going to be able to do that because you don't have enough budget. Maybe a movie is the better, because 2 hours of that, you can do everything visually you want. And then you can stick to a story versus trying to draw it out into like, you know, a schedule. Maybe that's a better format.
Maybe 100%. Yeah. And focus in on just a couple characters. One of the things I think I loved in one of the things I love about films is when they have a giant big issue going on in the world, but you don't really care about that. You only care about like a couple characters. Like I think of the original Cloverfield movie is a perfect example of like, there's a monster attacking a city, and that's just the stage of what's going on. You're just focusing in on a small couple pieces of character or a couple characters in the story trying to survive and get out of this. And then what they have to deal with as a result of this giant monster attack in the city. Whereas if this was, you know, a legendary film, they'd be like, oh yeah, this is going to be the monster attacking the city. And there may be like one person who's like the hero who has to figure out everything to be able to stop the monster.
Very cool. So on the flip side, what's a video game, or sorry, what's a IP or property that has never been a video game that you would love to see a video game?
That's kind of tough. This is going to be a weird one for me to kind of reach out to, but I'd love to have a Princess Mononoke or Mononoke Hime game in a very stylized world that has kind of like cell shading that takes San and them and the whole forest spirit story and really adapt that as a game. You know, playing through Avatar, the Last Frontier, and seeing just what like can be done with graphics in like a forest type area, seeing like what Unreal 5 can do with topography and tessellation that they're able to do. And also with just with like a nanite and being able to do lighting and stuff really, really well and not have it cost a ton of resources. I would love to see feudal Japan era style of game like Ghost of Tsushima, but focusing around the saving of the forest and the saving of, you know, the forest spirits versus a world where people are trying to mine out ore from the world to be able to create guns, to be able to create technology to survive against other humans in a time where, you know, worlds are colliding. And I think Princess Mononoke is a great story. I think it's a great film. I think it's something I would love to kind of explore on my own, just as a game, kind of, you know, Breath of the Wild.
You know, I was thinking about it because when you said Princess Mononoke, I think of like Miyazaki and his art style. And I'm like, I remember a game that was using that style in a pretty cool way. And that was Ni No Kuni. And I'm like, well, maybe get that studio. I think it was like, blinking on the name. Who does it? But there was another game too that you may want to check out. It's called Forgotten Anne. That literally looks like a Miyazaki film, video game. But
interesting. Okay.
There's a couple of good developers that I think that can bring that to life and, you know, aping a style, but bringing the heart of someone that truly is inspired by that can really, you know, bring something special, you know, where people want to live in the world, not just watch it. And I think that's the part of video games where we often, you know, want to live in that world. Everyone wants to be Iron Man in a suit. please let me do that. You know, Anthem. Stick Anthem and make an Iron Man game, right? I mean, come on, let's do that. I think that would be impressive. Well, very cool. Check out Forgotten Inn. And let me know what you think about that. I mean, just a trailer. I think you'll get a kick out of that. For me, it's kind of interesting because we've gotten so many good adaptations. I always go back to like, oh yeah, The Walking Dead Telltale game. That's actually based on a series and is one of the best adaptations we've gotten from that lens. So it always makes me think, okay, what could we do in that lens to really, once again, live in that world, make those decisions. So, and I'm going to change up some things to this because I always like change the rules of the question. So, or the answer I'm going to give. So what would I like to see get adapted? And the problem is a lot of these are already happening, which is good. I just hope they're good. Like Mass Effect. If we're getting a Mass Effect adaptation, I'm very excited. There has been anime type animation of Mass Effect. There's been comics, so there's already a couple different areas to get those. But if I was going to then go a little deeper into, you know, worlds I've loved being in that I want more of, and actually to just live in that world, wow. I think, or see it brought to life, I think I would have to go into... well, we already have The Witcher crap. That was going to be my answer, but I'm like, we already have The Witcher adaptation, and we've had a couple of those. So that's already happening. So this is going to get a little iffy, but there is a book series I love that had a video game that I would love to see brought to the screen. So it's kind of one of those mixed media, and that is the world of Raymond E. Feist. It's Betrayal of Krondor is the PC game back in the early 90s that, wow, I fell in love with that world, and it drove me to read the books. It was such a bizarre opposite, like, right? So, hello, kitty. Hello. My cat's got locked out, so they're not here. But Logan's got his cat to join us on this mission.
She's usually pretty good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
this
yeah.
My cat would have knocked everything over.
My cat would knock everything over on the shelf. So, but I think because of that, it was Raymond E. Feist is a contemporary of George R. R. Martin with very complex fantasy. And once again, we got the books, we got a couple of video games in that series. And I've always wanted that to be a adaptation on the screen, one way or the other, but most likely TV, I think, would do it justice because of the length and the size of the story. So that would be mine. It's a deep cut, I know, folks, but if you look at Betrayal at Krondor, you're going to be looking at this very old PC RPG with using some interesting polygonal graphics with some tactical combat with a great story. So that would be my go-to when it comes to talk about an adaptation to another format, kind of bridges both a book plus a video game. On the other end, this is going to be a cheat. I would love to see Avatar finally get a good video game. I know it's a cheat because there's been many Avatar video games, but they suck.
I feel you on that one. I was just thinking about Avatar and Demon Slayer is like the two where I'm like, I don't know if these games are any good, but man, I would love to have a good Avatar game. That'd be fantastic.
I mean, it's kind of and make it more like, I don't know, would it be like an open world? I'm just trying to think the way you could really bring that world to life. Would it be more of like a Mass Effect where it's like you've got conversations and growth of characters, growing relationships?
I like the idea. Keep it narrow. Keep it very linear. Just let you go from the, you know, from waking up and then travel to the different tribes and let Aang grow with his cast of characters, you know, have his characters be, you know, commentary to his learning and his experience, but keep it very focused and narrow in on just like, you know, him trying to become the Avatar and learning that. I think you could tell a tight little 30 hour story with that, maybe.
I'm wondering, do you remember the old game? It was a BioWare game. Was it Jade Empire?
Jade Empire? Yes.
Would that be an interesting take? Because BioWare did great, you know, character moments.
Yeah.
The combat's a little different, but you could play with it. Obviously, it'd be different than that game because kind of like Knights of the Republic, that style of gameplay doesn't really exist anymore. I wonder, you know, obviously BioWare is kind of buried within EA right now, but it would be kind of interesting of like who would be the right studio, you know, the style of bringing that world to life and bringing those character moments together. I'd say the team behind Baldur's Gate 3, but I don't want a turn-based RPG in that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I would want it to be action-based. Yeah. I'm not sure who would be good. I don't know. There's so many indie studios out there that are able to really kind of come up with some fun designs on stuff that would be interesting to see. Like if you could get a studio that not anyone's really like familiar with to be able to play around in that space. But yeah, I would love an Avatar game that's like really nice, really fun to play through and kind of tell a story as opposed to just being like a battler most of the time.
You know, I'm just playing Banishers right now, and I think about that Studio. They do great relationships, and they're finally working on like some real-time combat, which they do with Vampire, and now with this game. And it's like I just see their evolution to not just be the strange. Was it what was the game they did? The series, was it Strange? The relationship games where there was a lot of
Mask of Medan.
I'm blanking. Did they do the name. That? Colors.
Oh my gosh!
Yes. You know what I'm. I think we know. Where
I know where you're going. I know where you're going with it, but yeah, but I can't think of it. Like my brain is just stopped at this point.
Yeah, but it's that's a game that's more focused on like relationships and decisions, and there's really not much action in those games. But Don't Nod really started with those games. And then they've developed into like kind of getting some more refined combat and things like that, which I love because I like a little bit of a mix. So maybe they could do it. But yeah, to your point, there's so many studios that I could think could take that property, even if it's not Avatar, go to Korra. I mean, because that hasn't
don't
been
tease
touched
me.
Yet. So yeah, well,
don't tease exactly. me with a Korra game.
Well, there we go. I think that is a good point to end the show. Everyone who's listening to this, if you listen to our thoughts and think, I don't like that, or great, let me add on to that idea, or you have your own thoughts on these, let us know. We want to hear from you in our Discord, on all socials, in order to reach us. And we'd love to hear more about your thoughts on, you know, things we should check out that might lead us to like, oh, this could be a great video game or a great movie. So with that, Logan, thank you so much for joining us. Tell people where they can reach you.
If you guys want to hear anything about Xbox or game industry stuff from the perspective that I'm offering, you can find that over on YouTube as well as any podcatcher through Xbox Expansion Pass or XEP with Luke Lore, the Insipid Ghost, as the host of that. I just co-host there. If you want to learn more about Sea of Thieves and piracy, if any of that conversation sparked your interest or you heard about Sea of Thieves and want to know more about it, if you're like a PlayStation player, and that's coming up in April. Definitely check out the Keelhauled podcast. That is a 6-year podcast that I've been doing for just one game. Somehow every single week, I think I've only ever missed like maybe 3 weeks out of all the 6 years. And that's something that you can look forward to every Monday. Outside of that, I'm on social media at CAPT_LOGUN. Cause that's just it's a mix of love between Logan as Wolverine, but also Trigun as in Vash the Stampede. So if you know those references, then kudos to you.
Very, very cool. My son's named Logan, but spelled with an A. So there you go. awesome. Yeah. If you want to get into the world of Sea of Thieves, Logan's a great resource for that. Also, check out the XCP Discord. You have to be a patron, but you can obviously check out their stuff. They have a great Discord group. Once again, folks, check out his stuff. With Secret Friends, you can go to Threads at Secret Friends Unite, at Teoxtra. Follow me there. I'm also on the Twitters at Teoxtra and at Secret Friends U. Check out our Discord. It's a lot of fun. We talk about everything, tech, food, video games, goofiness. It's a lot of fun. And then check out our Patreon. Get a 1-week free trial and see what we're up to. And we're having a good time. So with that, Logan, thank you so much for joining us this week. Remember, folks, be the hero, not the villain.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite podcasting network. Visit secretfriendsunite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server. Or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.